kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Another reviews episode lined up. A lot of good games to talk about. At least I hope they're good. Letting me know whether or not they are good. First up, Tim Ekibis, how are you doing?
I am tired because we're recording this on Daylight Savings Day and children don't know what that is. And yeah,
I don't know. I am childless, so explain the plight to me.
Well, you know how you understand the concept of time, at least to some degree, as most adults do, where they... where one could wake up, look at the clock and say, no, that's too early. You know, that's too early to wake up. This is much more of an issue when you're like springing ahead or whatever. But either way, it's like, you know, we can kind of do things to our routine to reset our clock. Right.
Yeah.
We can wake up in the morning and say like, oh, wow, it's 5 a.m. Let's not wake up. But a child is just going to get up. They're just up because that's what their internal clock says. They don't care what time is. They don't care. They don't give a shit.
They give zero fucks about what time it is.
Zero fucks about what time it is. So you have to then adhere to the previous day's time when it is not, that is not what time it is. That is not where we are at. But that was coupled with the fact that we were over at my parents' house last night and like dude woke up at like 2:30 in the morning and was like, I want to go downstairs. And I'm like, no. And he's like,
that's
I want
still
grandma.
3:30.
And I'm like, that's kind of extraordinary. That's just more probably because we were sleeping in a weird place. But then, so like, I'm trying to comfort him and sleeping in the same bed with him. And he's just a twitchy little fuck. And I didn't get a lot of sleep. He seemed fine. But yeah. Woo!
Oh, man. At least that gives you an extra hour for video games.
Did it?
No.
Did it, though?
No, it didn't.
Nothing. You never get an extra hour when they're this age, I don't think. I'm just getting back the hour I lost earlier this year, you know?
Yeah. My condolences.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So, should we talk about games?
Let's talk about games. Yeah, I would say a game, but there was many games involved in this game I'm going to game about.
That's a good way to put it. But first game to talk about tonight is called SNK 40th Anniversary Collection, woo! Developed by Digital Eclipse, published by NIS America, released November 13th on the Switch for $39.99. 2018 marks the 40th anniversary of legendary studio SNK. To celebrate this extraordinary milestone, a variety of classic arcade games from SNK's Golden Age are coming back together on one anthology on Nintendo Switch. SNK's 40th Anniversary Collection is packed full of retro games and a treasure trove of features. Tim, what kind of games and what kind of features?
Okay, so the first thing I think that people need to understand when they look at and think of this 40th anniversary collection is that this is not Neo Geo games. I think that's kind of the first thing people think of when they think of SNK. Mm-hmm. They think Neo Geo, so they're like, oh, well, Metal Slugs and Arts of Fighting and King of Fighters, Samurai Showdown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that stuff. This is not that. Over the years have, there's been many a collection, I feel, of Neo Geo games once kind of, that business ran its course, like as early as the PS2, it's like, oh man, I can get these, what once were 200 multi-$100 Neo Geo carts on a disc and there's like a dozen of them and oh, it's $15. which felt like magic at the time. And, you know, they've been re-released, like there's, I think every system now pretty much gets, some classic Neo Geo releases. So that's pretty well-worn territory. What the Anniversary Collection is looking to collect and present to you in the year 2018 is stuff pre-Neo Geo. This is stuff that, like, you'd have to be, you know, an old man like me or you that was playing games in arcades or on the NES in the 80s to even, like, remember this stuff. Because some of it is pretty obscure. It's the collection entails stuff from SNK's inception in 1978 through 1990, which is probably right around when the Neo Geo launched. So this is stuff that has not gotten as much love. Let me just breeze down the list here of stuff that is on this collection. We have Hitman. Alpha Mission, which is a vertical scrolling shooter. Athena, which is a side scrolling, kind of like a little action RPG game, which is cool. Crystallis, which is a classic NES game, not an arcade game. That is an action RPG as well, top down. Guerrilla War. Ikari, Warriors 1, 2, and 3, Iron Tank, POW, Prehistoric Isle, Psycho Soldier, Street Smart, TNK3, and Vanguard.
Vanguard, I am especially excited for.
Yeah? You got nostalgia for Vanguard? I never heard of it before.
Yeah, there was an old bowling alley in our area that years and years ago had some arcade machines, and Vanguard was one of them, and I just always had a soft spot for that game.
Nice. Yeah. So what's cool, so that is the base game list of what comes with your purchase when you buy it this week. There's also 10 free DLC games coming in December.
Correction, there's 11.
11, oh shit.
Yeah, 9 will be implemented via a patch. The two remaining ones, Beast Busters and SAR Search and Rescue, will be a free bundle on the game store page that you have to download.
Gotcha, I did not hear about those. Man, you know, I saw, God, they just announced what the rest of them were. So it's like Munchmobile, Fantasy, Sasuke versus Commander, Chopper 1, Time Soldiers, and then they announced the other ones, but I didn't write them down in my notes. But
there's a lot of games. That's what people need.
Yeah, it's a decent amount of games. Like all said and done, you're getting like 23 games for $40. If you're looking at this purely from a value perception of like game to dollar ratio, like it's not something packed as thick as like Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection. But a couple things here, you know, these games have not been released. Like the work has not been done on these games before to put them on a modern console. And second, when I say that you're getting a lot of these games like Alpha Mission, Athena, Guerrilla War, most of the ones I talked about here, you are getting the arcade release or the US arcade release, the Japanese arcade release, the US home console release, and the Japanese home console release.
So you're getting
where applicable. It doesn't, like, Crystallis was an NES game to begin with, so there's only two versions of that. Same with Iron Tank. But yeah, in the case of a lot of these games, you're getting four different versions of the game.
Damn.
If it had a home console release, if it, you know, there's US and Japanese release. So it was like
they're not fucking around.
They're not. It's a really comprehensive collection of these games, and it was less so going between like the Japanese and American versions, because in most cases those were pretty similar other than like the name had been changed. But like playing a arcade game like Alpha Mission, playing the arcade version, then going and playing the NES version and just like seeing how different it was and how they scaled things down, like that was really interesting stuff to do while exploring this collection. That was me sipping water. So those are the games. There is a lot of like Guerrilla War, Ikari 1 and 2 are all like kind of Rambo overhead shooter type games. You know, TNK3 and Iron Tank are both tanking. Well, Iron Tank is actually a home adaptation of TNK3, sort of, a little bit. It's kind of an expanded port. POW is a brawler. Prehistoric Isle is a fun scrolling shooter. Street Smart is a fighting game, like SNK's first fighting game. It's got some interesting ideas. I don't think it's particularly fun, but it's interesting. And that's like what a lot of that's the thing. It's like these are a lot of obscure-ish 80s arcade games that are not particularly long. Like Guerrilla War, you know, theoretically you can drop enough quarters in that you can beat it in like 10-15 minutes. Like it's not a super long, you know, game. It's an arcade game. And there's a great variance in quality, especially like a lot of the weird stuff that's coming in the DLC. But it's like it's not just about having a collection of the best, most fun SNK games. You know, it's about like these games getting out there for people to play and check out where they might not have checked them out before. Like a lot of these games, like I rented, you know, their console versions in the 80s. So I was familiar with a lot of the console versions, but there's other things like Psycho Soldier I had never played. And that's a really fun game. And Prehistoric Isle is a really fun game. And I never even heard of Vanguard before this. So it's getting a chance to check that stuff out. And when you break stuff out, like there is so many options and so much content here for you to consume. I mean, you can sit that you they have options there for you to like toggle like how many lives you want, the difficulty of the games, control options. Something they did like a lot of the games, like I think Guerrilla War and Akari Warriors, they had like this stick where it was a joystick with like a knob on top of it, so you could control the movement of your character and their facing all at once. Not unlike today's twin stick shooters. It's a little bit different, but they adapted the controls so they work as twin stick shooters. But something they actually emailed us to comment on is I guess there's going to be a day one patch with some single stick movement and control or movement and aim options on there.
Which lets a lot of the two player games be playable with a single switch since you could play on a single Joy-Con.
Yeah. Yep.
Options.
Yeah, options. It's what you want. You can remap buttons any which way you want. It's fine. And that's for like any game on there, I think. You can get like a little bit in the... Just because like the menus can be so dense when you consider the fact that you have all these games with all these different versions from, you know, two continents involved. Just to like, okay, what options am I setting in here? But it's fine. Everything has save states. There is an option to play like the whole game to flip it into portrait mode, because a lot of these games have that the taller rather than wide aspect ratio, so they'll fit on the screen better if flipped to portrait mode, which will be
nice.
It's a nice feature to have, but especially I don't know if you've heard about the flip grip.
Fuck yeah, man! I can't wait for mine to show up.
Okay, yeah, okay. So we're on the same. Yeah, the flip grip, if you don't know, is something that I'm guessing we both kickstarted back in July. Which it just simple enough. You put the Joy-Cons on the side of it. You slot your Switch into it, you know, facing vertically, and you can play games in a vertical orientation. It was like $15. It's going to be available through Fangamer. It's like, yeah,
it's genius.
Yeah, it's simple and genius. So, yeah, I am very excited to play these games in the proper aspect ratio. On that when it comes up, but you can also, you know, it has kind of your standard emulated options of like, okay, you can stretch things out and mess with the proportions, try to make them fill more of the screen, you know? But I like that that's coming, and I like that it's like, it's not just like, oh, you can flip one or two games or you can flip them in the game. You can flip this thing any which way you want. Just flip that sucker all over the place. Boom. Okay. So when you are playing a game, I think this is when you're playing a game, you can just hold L to rewind the fucking game.
Sweet.
I know. So if you die, and you'll die a lot, like a lot of these are, you know, they're arcade quarter munchers. If you die, you can just hold down L and just rewind, which is really cool. And it doesn't
your
seem
way
like
through.
Well, it doesn't seem like there's a limit to how far it can roll you back. Because again, like the point here isn't like, I mean, if you want to prove your mettle against the default settings of the game and win on one quarter, like, you know, more power to you. But if you just want to experience the game, like, they give you all these options. So every single game on here has the option to watch a playthrough. Like, they just have a recorded playthrough that you can just sit there and watch.
That is cool as shit.
Yeah, so you can, like, fast forward through it. You can, like, skip ahead. And if any particular moment, you can just pause it and then start playing from that point in the video.
Oh, that is cool as shit, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I imagine it's just like loading a replay in the emulator. So you can just start playing from that point. Now you can't jump back out at any point because once you mess with the timeline, you can't jump out of it, you know, but I still think it's like really cool. Like if you just want to jump to the end of Crystallis and fight the last boss, you could do that. Or in any of these games, it's just such a cool feature. And it makes it really accessible. Like, even if you're not good at arcade games, or like if you're just interested in kind of consuming the history of it, like you don't even need to play these games to get the value out of the collection, which probably sounds weird and like blasphemy to some people. But just having the option there, I think, is awesome. Like, maybe I just want to sit and watch like an expert playthrough of Guerrilla War and like see how someone could possibly get through that game without getting smoked and dropping a dozen quarters into it, you know?
Yeah, seriously, as a kid in an arcade, you only have a limited amount of money to play games with, and your mom's going to be shopping for a shitload longer than your quarters are going to last.
Absolutely.
So you just end up spending time watching people play games. Mm-hmm. Now you can do that from the comfort of your own home for free.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like if you just wanted to kickstand your Switch while you're eating something, like a bowl of cereal, let's say, and just watch a playthrough, you can do that.
Like a Let's Play machine.
Yeah. So on top of that, there is a pretty expansive history and museum mode, which is just like filled with freaking stuff. Like, you know, Frank Cifaldi of the Video Game History Foundation worked on this game. It is literally his job to collect like all these old arcade flyers and just like manuals and artwork and all that stuff. So there is a expansive collection, and it doesn't just include information about the games, that are in the collection. It is literally everything that SNK did, in that time frame. So there's tons of games that have, details and art and trivia in there that aren't in the collection, but you can still read about them. There's still content for you to consume for those games. Has a sound test mode. If you just want to listen to some jams, always welcome.
Nice.
But it's like, yeah, as a package, it's like they've done work on, you know, in recent history, like the Mega Man Legacy Collection, and like earlier this year there was the Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection. But like this, just out of any, you know, and I have lots of classic compilations in my house, and a lot of them are just like, okay, yeah, there'll be a few extras, but we're mostly just jumping a bunch of ROMs or whatever on a disc to sell some copies. It's more of a, you know, I don't want to say quantity over quality, but in a lot of cases, that's what it is. Like, we're just going to get you the games you want, like, not dress it up a lot. But this, man, there is a lot of quality here.
A lot of love and attention to detail.
A lot of love and attention in both, you know, putting these games on here, like the different versions, the amount of options you have, the different options for just consuming the games, all of the background information. It's really pretty fantastic. It's like a really nice, well put together, like, package of these games. It's like when you just look at, like, when I just think of like other compilations, I can't think of another game compilation that is better in terms of its like its presentation and its comprehensiveness regarding the material. Like there's probably collections out there that's like, okay, there is more better games, you know, there is more fun games in one package, than this has, but I can't think of anyone that is so dense in its material and free with its way to consume the games that are included as this SNK 40th anniversary collection, which is at the moment exclusive to the Switch.
Yeah. I think what I'm most excited about with this collection is so many of the other collections that come out, they release them and they're done. With this one, they're releasing more titles through updates and through downloads, mm-hmm. which could potentially lead to even more games available in the future, which isn't something you usually see with collections like this.
Yeah, and it's free stuff. Like, it's stuff they had to meet, you know, a release deadline for probably to get it out before Black Friday, I would assume.
Probably.
probably. And so they couldn't finish the work on the other game. So they're releasing them for free. So yeah,
December 11th, by the way, the rest of the games are going to be launching
more games. So it's a solid investment up front. And then there's more coming down the road.
Awesome. So $40 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think this is a must buy for those, with interest in video game history. It's so cool. It's so cool. It's such a bunch of, like, if you don't think you'd be interested in looking at old 80s arcade games, then maybe this isn't the collection for you. But I think for anyone that already has interest in this collection, like anyone whose ears perked up at SNK 40th anniversary collection, like, yeah, you need to check this out. It's well worth it. It's an awesome collection. It's really well done. It's really fantastic, I think.
Awesome. That is very, very good to hear, because I've had my eye on this one for months now.
Yeah, basically the moment they announced it, I was really interested to see how it all come together, and it came together pretty well.
So let me get your opinion on one thing with this game.
Sure.
Should I go with the collector's edition off the NIST store that comes with the art book and the soundtrack and all the other fun stuff, or should I go digital? That way I never have to worry about swapping the cartridge.
This is probably a game where I'd go more digital just because I want to have it there. Like, I mean, personally, I'm becoming less interested in having more stuff in my house.
Yeah, you know? Same.
Yeah, so
as I look around my room, I feel the same way.
Yeah, I would say go digital, like, because it's just, you know, you're going to be out there with your Switch, and maybe it's just like, you know what, I'm just going to sit down and watch a playthrough of Street Smart right now. I don't want to fumble with this. I need to watch this game right now. Yeah.
I forever sucked at Vanguard. Now I can watch someone actually complete the game.
Yeah, that was a tough game.
Fun, though.
Yeah. I really like Prehistoric Isle. I think that might be, like, my favorite thing that I hadn't played that I... Well, you know, Psycho Soldier's really fun, too. And I never played the arcade version of Athena, and that game's so neat because, like, you're picking up, like, different armor and weapons and shields and items as you go through. Like, it's kind of crazy, like, how much stuff they tried to pack in there for just an arcade experience, you know, what you think of as just an arcade experience.
And this review has made me so much more excited for this game to come out.
Cool.
Yeah. November 13th is so far away.
Still, yeah, it's a week away, man.
Oh, man. Well, Tim, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts on the game?
No, never. I'm too brain dead to come up with an awful pun, but it's good. It's real good.
All right, moving on. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Crazy times, you know, holiday season's coming into fruition, which means looking out for those buy two, get one sales and maxing out my credit card. Because, you know, that's something a responsible, mature adult would do. Oh, God, kill me. I've bought a lot of things.
I don't want to kill you. You do good job for me.
Oh, that's true. Well, kill my drive to buy games I won't use.
Dude, I wish I could do that for myself.
What, you picked up something recently, too, or are you just looking at stuff you want to get that you could have picked up recently?
Well, my eyes are on the new Hitman next week, but I know I'm not really going to be able to play it, so I'm fighting with myself to not get the thing.
I actually did play that game at one. I did try that, actually. I've never played the other Hitman games, though, so my take on it wouldn't be good as far as, like, new features and stuff, but I definitely got a bit of enjoyment out of it. But I'm going to wager it's more of the same. Like, I played a level where you were supposed to be trying to assassinate a person who drives a race car. And the idea was they gave you pretty much like free roam to figure out how to get to them. And then they gave you the means in which to kill. But I will say the means to kill is pretty scripted. Like, you can do one of these two or three things. But the fun for me was the actual trying to get to them and like social engineering that takes place as far as like, okay, I can get this guy's costume and walk around. Maybe I can like kind of sneak past these guys. Maybe I can pay this guy some money to kind of spill a beer, like weird stuff like that. But it had some interesting context to it. But I also feel like you could probably wait a little bit and it'll drop in price pretty fast, or
probably
Black Friday sales or holiday sales might be able to do good just to get you kind of rolling. But I don't know. I'm rambling. The point is, games are plentiful, and it's hard to make time for everything you like. So save the money unless the impulse is too strong, in which case, fuck.
Do you have your eyes on anything for Black Friday yet?
At the present, no. I actually was looking at some of the sales, and I thought about getting God of War on that sale, but then I also just bought God of War during Target's Buy Two, Get One, and it has me questioning if I should just return it to the store and then get it on Black Friday for like another 10 or 15 less than I paid. But then that required me to go find it on Black Friday in the mobs. Yeah. So I feel like if I can't think of anything else I want, I'd rather just pay the fee to not deal with the crowd.
Plus all the extra driving you'd have to do.
Oh, touche. I have to drive to return the game, then drive back to get the repeat copy and all that junk. But like right now, I feel like any games I'm going to want at this point are going to be surprise games, because I can't think of anything I want that I haven't come across yet, unless it's not out yet. Like, I want Monster Boy. So I definitely want to get in on that action. And I feel like that's even like the only one. Like, am I forgetting something that hasn't come out yet that's a holiday release?
That hasn't come out yet? I don't know. What else is still coming? Just Cause 4, but that's in December. Darksiders, Fallout.
Oh, yeah, Darksiders. That's the sad part. Darksiders 3 and Just Cause 4 are games that have my interest. But by that same token, I never played through Just Cause 3 or Darksiders 1 or 2. I only played some of Darksiders, not the entire game. So I feel like I can't justify the third buy. However, I kind of want to buy it to support the fact that the company went on the limb and said we're going to try to release this third game, even though we kind of didn't sell the other two very well.
Yeah, I'm planning on picking up Darksiders at least. I've enjoyed the series, and the fact that it's back makes me want to support it.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, it's the support component there, really. Like, I feel like Just Cause 4 ain't going to have a problem selling anything. Like, I was able to watch that game get played, and it's going to be interesting. But in the end, it's just more still controlled or I won't say control chaos, because I guess it is, because you do stuff, but it's just more chaos, more open world chaos, but with weather effects. Though I will say it's the weather effects that piqued my interest. Like watching a tornado tear through a military base is pretty cool. Though the sad, annoying component, and this is me being a stickler for shit, weird considering how I review games generally, is that, the weather, it looks all fine and dandy. You watch a tornado tear through a base and whatnot, but you just know the damage isn't going to be permanent, because the logic is supposed to be that the weather effects are completely random, which means you can have a tornado happen at any time when you're in the biome that has tornado weather effects. And when it comes through, it wrecks the entire environment. Like, nothing is supposedly safe. And they, like, watched a demo of a, not a demo, but a play session of a like I said, military base getting destroyed. But you look at that, you just know, nah, it's going to have, they're going to have to regenerate it later. Because if it was truly random and damage was truly permanent, wouldn't that stand to reason that eventually the entire landscape could just get demolished over time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so by virtue of the fact that they have to rebuild things, I feel like it lessens the impact of environmental destruction. I guess it's interesting for the component of like actual combat. Like, oh crap, this tornado's coming through and I got to fight while dealing with this. But it's just a temporary event. I'm a stickler.
But I don't know. I'm pretty excited for Just Cause 4. I think that and Smash Brothers both coming out in December are going to make sure that my December is packed.
That's the one I should have thought about, is Smash Brothers. I pre-ordered that when they had the controller bundle with the game. It's pretty much probably one of my final Gamers Club Unlock purchase before that thing expires. But what a way to go out. Because, you know, you can't get discounts on controllers with Gamers Club Unlock.
True.
But if it's in a bundle with a game, you do get the discount. So
I don't know what to do with Smash. I really want the controller and I really want the steelbook, but I kind of just want to go digital so that I never have to worry about swapping games to play Smash.
It's a very logical statement to make. I mean, for me, I just like having physical copies of stuff in general, but in this particular instance, the no-brainer part for me was the controller. Mm-hmm. Is the fact that I can get the controller on 20% discount. And again, like, controllers never go on sale. And discounts typically don't apply to them. So it's like, well, got me one now. So now I'll officially have three controllers. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. I have the Joy-Cons that came with the system. I got the Xenoblade controller. And I'll have the Smash Bros. Controller.
Nice. So
it's a good setup. And that's me, like, I get one more and I'll be good to play four-player Smash Brothers, which will never happen because I had the Wii U Smash Brothers, had two Wii U Pro controllers, and like the, you know, like the, that, whatever the one, whatever that Pro controller was connected to the Wiimote, it worked like kind of like a Super Nintendo controller. Mm-hmm. And I didn't actually open any of the Wii U Pro controllers until 2 months ago.
Oh, Jesus.
And I used one of them and I used it once. So collectors, I have a Wii U Pro controller that's never been used and one that's been used one time.
Proud
please
of you,
tell the show if they have value, because I don't know.
I am proud of you.
Proud to be hoarding controllers.
That's the way to do it, man. But we should probably talk about the games that you're here to talk about, huh?
That's right, Smash Brothers.
Yes, first game to talk about is Super Smash. God, I wish. How amazing would that be?
That would be the shit, though. You got to admit, that'd probably be like the easiest review to do. Where's your take? Just buy it. You
buy already the goddamn did. Game. Buy you the goddamn game.
It. But if you didn't buy it anyway, whatever. Thanks for a free game, Nintendo. That's good. That's one thing I think is hilarious in and of itself before we start the show. Just like, don't get me wrong, I get that people want reviews and know if games are good, but there are certain games where it's almost like you're just giving the studio a free copy of the product because it's not going to do badly. Yeah. Here's your copy of new Super Mario Odyssey to review, and you're just like, thanks yeah, for the it's free good. Game, Nintendo. It's good. You know you want it. It's not bad. And I got it for free. Whatever. But where Smash Brothers will be like that. Zelda games are typically like that. I mean, if they're rare. I mean, there's like certain studio house games and specific series, mind you. But it's those games where it's just like, you're just giving games away. Because there's nothing to talk about here. It's good. Just buy it. Whatever. But now we should talk about stuff, otherwise we'll never get to it.
We never will. We're already 10 minutes into your segment, Purnell.
Oh, shit.
This always happens. This always happens.
This is what happens when we're having fun. I had a bad day, and now I'm having fun. This is what I need.
You're
this
welcome.
Thanks.
Anyway, let's dive into these. The first game that you're here to talk about is called Galmetal, developed by DMM Games, published by Marvelous and XSEED, released October 30th on the Switch for $29.99. One night while on his way home from school, a high school boy is abducted by the Octoids, an extraterrestrial species bent on revenge. The boy's soul is transported into a high school girl's body in a sinister experiment. Now sharing a body, the duo must work together with her high school band, KMG, to defeat the aliens with their greatest weakness, metal. Purnell, this sounds batshit crazy. Tell me about it.
Well, premise-wise, it absolutely is batshit crazy because I think it's hilarious that it would have already kind of made sense if it was just girl metal band fighting aliens. Like, makes sense in like a, you know, crazy anime thing, but it would have been weird but made sense. But they had to slap the boy fused with girl, then thrown to Earth, and now they're in the band. Like, who was thinking that? Like, why is that a thing? I don't know. Pretty much, it had to be drugs. But I kind of was stuck with that logic the whole game. Like, why is this even a thing? Didn't have to be a thing. But so the idea behind the game is exactly as you said. Aliens are on the move, specifically the Octoids, and then potentially other aliens, but that's for you to find out. On the move, and it is up to this band to stop them. How does the band stop them? With metal. How does metal factor in? You. So every day, game goes by a series of days, the kids will be discussing matters in school. Your main character and her bandmates will be talking on their cell phones via text or in class. And it's just general, you know, like sort of slice of life chatter between the girls, with the exception being that they're all talking about, oh, alien battle, we got to take care of that tonight or something. And depending on some of the response you get, it's like usually like you can choose an icon to respond sometimes, or like one of the girls might say, hey, I'm going to the convenience store. And the other girl goes, I'm going to go to the electronics shop. And you have to choose which one you want to go hang out with. And if you choose one, you'll get an event unlock during the next segment, which I'm getting into, which is considered free time. And in the free time segment, it's sort of like how Persona 5 did things. I love how I'm like, everything's Persona now in regards to this kind of concept. But it's that thing where essentially you get a certain amount of stamina and you can choose where to go to spend the stamina. So the purpose of going to different places and using the stamina is that there are multiple stats, including things like guts and morality and clivlack or whatever the heck the weird word is. And the idea behind those, they're supposed to improve your performance stats when you have music show battles. Though for me, I barely paid attention to those things. And my only true interest, aside from just seeing numbers go up, was every once in a while you can unlock like little cinema segments with the different girls in the band as you get your relationships with them up, and you'll be able to like, I guess a little vignettes where you learn a little bit more about them, or you just kind of discuss matters with them and become closer friends. And the vignettes are kind of designed to be done like stick theater. So it's like a cardboard cutout and it's on like a popsicle stick and they're like bopping around, and it sounds cheesy, but there's a certain charm to it, just like how the story is portrayed in a right-to-left manga style with the panels popping up. It's got charm. And one other thing you're able to do, I forgot to mention during the free time segments, is you're able to do band practice. So there's solo practice where you and your fused buddy will go to practice alone. And it's at this time that she will describe to you, because the girl is the drummer. The boy knows, and he's the one in control of the bar. I guess that is kind of why they did the fusion. Now it makes sense. So she's the drummer, but the boy's in control of her body, and he doesn't know how to drum. So she's kind of telling him, hey, you might, based on this battle, we're going to use this song, and I recommend these drum beats for you to play in order to defeat them. So that allows you to practice the drum beats, which, again, I will get into a little bit more shortly. Group play is when you actually do the same thing, but you play it with the entire band playing the song. It costs more stamina, so you're less likely to want to do that unless you just really feel like you want to hear what the music sounds like. Then, once you've used up all the days between each battle, or between the beginning and the time for battle, you'll switch to the battle mode. And what that is the band sets up shop, a little cinema sequence plays in the manga style again, where the new adversaries show up and the stage is set. You guys are going to be battling in front of a ramen shop, or you're going to be battling under the underground at the center of the earth or whatever. I'm just making some of these up, but you do go to crazy places. And the battle begins. So what happens is the band will play a song. And each band member plays a different instrument. You have the rhythm guitar, the lead guitar, the keyboard, and they all play. But the one thing that's not being played is the drums, because that's your job.
Mm.
Now, the way drumming works in the game is the song is playing, and there are no notes that show up on the screen. Not a one. You're responsible for all of it. So you have multiple ways to control this character. There's the Joy-Con. And the Joy-Con will make it so that you kind of have to swing them up and down, similar drumsticks. And depending on when, like how you swing them, whether you kind of turn to the side or if you just kind of swing them up and down, that determines whether you're hitting like the kick or the snare. Left one hits the left side, right stick hits the right side. And if you hit a certain pattern of left and right being like, you know, the order and the rhythm, you do something called, like, I guess, like a, I just call it for the sake of it, a drum pattern. And that drum pattern is how you build up combo. So let me give you an example, because this is weird to describe. So one simple pattern, I think it's called Enter the Sandman, is just left, right, left, right, left, right. That's the pattern. But you might get another one that goes left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. And you're doing that, you're trying to combine the two, like in sequence, like do the Sandman, then the weird one I just did. And you're trying to combine them in order to the rhythm of the song to get more combo points. Now, this sounds simple, and in a way it is if you just want to play through the story mode. You don't have to do a ton here to get through it. But if you want to get decent high scores, there are like 15 or 16 different drum patterns in the game, and you'll likely have to kind of do a decent job of learning them all. Again, this sounds weird and sounds like it's really difficult to do, but, and I'll get to that towards the end of the review, but there's more to it than like that and what type of game I think this is. So I just described the Joy-Con control system. Another control method is the handheld mode, and you press buttons. Like, instead of just having the drumstick to hit the kick and the snare, there are multiple buttons that let you hit the hi-hats, the tom-toms, the kicks, the snares, pretty much the whole drum set. So you can get more varied sounds out of your play by using the Joy-Cons attached to the system. Though, of course, the drum patterns are still being based on whether you hit the left and the right. So you might want to go, I don't know, cymbal, cymbal, hi-hat. And all the system is registered for the combo is left and right. And then the last way to play the game is the touchscreen. And the touchscreen will display all the different parts of the drums, and you just tap them to get the sound out. And I think when you want to get really into it, I think that's probably the best way to play is the touchscreen. All the methods work in their own way, and they're all fun. But I feel like if you're like, I want to get a very specific sound, you're likely to be doing the touchscreen because you can see everything. You have to remember specific buttons for every component of the drum set, and the Joy-Cons are more limited in what you can play. So, but it's all fun. So what kind of game is this as a whole? Well, as I played it, it sort of reminded me of a really old game on the PlayStation 2. And that game was called Unison. I think maybe two listeners have heard of that damn game. Because it got very little press, and I don't even think it sold very well. And then the idea of that game was sort of similar, where it's like music was playing, and the idea was that you had to do choreographed dance numbers. Now, unlike Gal Metal, the unison dance routines were very structured and specific. The game had a specific dance routine it wanted you to do to succeed at the song, which means you have to remember a series of button patterns. But with Gal Metal, you are appreciating the song and the art of drumming, just like how in unison you're listening to, you're appreciating the music and the art of the dance, but you get out what you put in. What you put in being, hey, I want to go to free play and dabble around and see how cool I can make this song sound with my drumming. And as you do that and you learn the different drum patterns and get better and better, you will also start to sound better and better. And in some weird way, it helps you learn rhythm. Though, you're obviously, I'm not going to sit here and tell you something ridiculous like, you'll learn a drum from this game because you fucking won't. You will not. And if you think you will, you're fooling yourself. But it is decent for like kind of picking up rhythm. If you're, it's like drumming, it's like desk drumming, but with more options. And with
which
that,
sounds really fucking cool.
Exactly. Like, it's a very different type of game. Like, I would not have minded, admittedly, if they did a little bit more with the story mode stuff. Though, by that same token, I'm not sure what they could have done with the stats thing. Because, again, you build up the different stats when you are in town doing stuff with the girls or taking on activities. But if the game's premise is that you're drumming freeform to the music, what really could the stats do? Like, they do things like, let me give you an example of one. One of the stats makes it so that you get more points from your combos. Another stat makes it so that if the enemies attack you, because eventually they do kind of do, like, distractive attacks, they come less frequently, or you shake them off faster. So stuff like that. But ultimately, like I said, I just kind of ignored the things. I'm just like, I just want to play the game. I want to play I want to pump some stuff. And I want to see crazy little cinema sequences with the cool girls in the band. So it's an interesting little title.
Nice. Well, for $30, what do you think of it?
I feel like I don't want to say just a definite buy or anything like that, because this is a very niche title. But if you are a music game aficionado, but you're looking for something a little different, as in you like music games, but you kind of don't feel like you need to have another press the buttons to the beat sort of thing, as in the beat they tell you to do, this is a cool game to kind of step away from that, because now you're playing your own beat. Yeah, it's freestyling. And they set up a pretty interesting little score system in there with which to track how you're doing. So I think it's a definite try, more close to a buy if you're really, if you're entrenched in rhythm games already.
Damn, now I have to make the decision. I have like $30 on my account. Do I save it for SNK 40th Anniversary Collection that Tim just talked about, or do I go with Gal Metal?
Well, my personal take on a statement like that, if you're legitimately considering them both, though SNK is a pretty cool collection, it's still just that. It's a collection. It's true. A combination of games that have existed and will exist. Whereas this other game is someone taking on a new concept and making it good, which means my vote always typically goes towards pay for the experimentation on the guys doing something different.
Damn it, Purnell, I had my mind made up and you have to come on here and give a review and completely screw up my plans.
That's the goal. That's what I do, baby. Make it a little different.
Oh, man, sounds good. But next game to talk about is called Steven Universe Save the Light, developed by Grumpy Face Studios and Finite Reflection Studios, published by Cartoon Network Games. This one also released October 30th on the Switch for $24.99. Join the Crystal Gems on the ultimate quest. A mysterious new gem has stolen a powerful weapon. Only Steven and his friends have what it takes to stop her. Save the Light is a unique RPG hybrid that combines real-time and turn-based combat. Purnell, tell us about Steven Universe Save the Light.
I guess I was going to make a joke and say it is not unique, but I did realize there is one little component that does make it unique compared to what I reference it to, which I'll get into. First and foremost, though, so I had heard of Steven Universe Save the Light before the review option came up. Now, I remember the game not doing too well in the review circuit, but at the time, I had no understanding of who or what the hell Steven Universe was. So I was just like, oh, just a game that didn't do too well, whatever. But fast forward to today, or rather a couple weeks ago, when, or a week or two ago when the code came in, and I still wasn't a viewer of the show, but I knew who Steven Universe was. So it was like, I'm coming into it was like, okay, fresh eyes. Let's see what this game's all about. And it's pretty cool. Like, I want to watch Steven Universe now after having played this game. Like, I did not expect to enjoy it. So to go into what it is, the way the game plays is it plays a lot like Paper Mario without the actual paper mechanics, mind you. Like, you're not folding yourself up or rolling into sheets or whatever. But it does have that semblance of how Mario would explore the world in that game, like walking towards the screen and away from the screen and kind of walking behind stuff and environmental interactions and the like. And also, battles kind of flow like the Mario Superstar Soccer games, like the Mario and Luigi RPG. So the way those battles work is that when you go into combat, and keep in mind, if I'm missing a beat on my description, let me know, because I'm just rambling here. So when battles take place, it is, like you said, a hybrid between turn-based and like real-time. As battles start, there is a sort of stargaze that comes up in the lower left corner. And it starts out every round at a specific number, typically like 5 or so. And as you do attacks, each player has attacks that use a certain number of star points to activate. As you use them, the stargaze goes out to 0. And if it hits 0, short of using an item or waiting for the time gaze to finish, you know, completing a revolution, you'll be unable to do more attacks. When you do an attack, your character will enter an animation. And you can do a time button press to either connect the attack or get a really decent time button press to get a perfect attack, which determines how much damage you do and if there's like more of a follow-through to an additional attack animation that you can do, which, of course, means more damage. There are synergy options in this game, too, which is kind of cool. So when you do attacks in this game, every once in a while, if you nail a perfect attack, a character in your party will want to congratulate that party member for such a good job. And when you do, I'm going to lead to that in a little bit too, like why that is pretty freaking nice, honestly. You will say, yeah, you know, choose who to give the kudos. And you'll say, hey, I want Amethyst to congratulate Steven on what he just did. And she will do so. Once you've done enough of those and enough, you know, like it builds relationships between the two characters. And once you've gotten it to a certain point, you are able to do a team-up attack. Depending on who has the maxed-out relationship for that time, it determines what you can do. Sometimes, for example, Steven and his father have like something called like a family jam session, and they start playing instruments together, and that results in like a full, like a decent party boost, like full healing and stuff like that. However, when the gems manage to get a full relationship, they get a fusion. So, for example, Connie and Steven become Steveny, and they get a whole I was surprised, like, whoa, they fuse, and they get a whole new swarm of attacks they get to do. They get brand new attacks and their fused forms. They're more powerful, but of course this downsides your down one party member. But it's a pretty cool thing to see, and it actually makes you kind of, especially if you're like me and you didn't watch the show, it makes you really curious to see what the fusions are going to be, because I didn't know about Steveny or any of them. I knew nothing about these things, but I thought they were awesome to see happen. But fans of the show will know these fusions and probably get a little geeked about, like, oh, I can't wait to see what these two can do when they fuse together, like attack-wise or whatever. But enemies also will have a penchant to want to attack you as well. And when they attack, they will do a number of different, like group attacks and single attacks. But same premise applies. When they attack you, if you press the button at the right time, you'll get like a guard. And if you press at the right time, you'll get a perfect guard. Now, as you kill jerks, you will eventually get experience, as games do. And when you get enough, you'll level up your character. When characters level up, they can learn new abilities. But in addition to that, they get skill points. The skill points can be used to beef up a number of different stats. Think if you've played Guardian Heroes back in the day, it's a similar styling to that, where there's like different bars related to different stats, and you can put like one skill point into one bar in the stat. I guess Castle Crash is another example of that style of leveling up a character.
Yeah.
But unlike Castle Crashers, depending on, like, there's different parts within the experience bar where when you level up to that point, you'll get a modifier to your character. Sometimes I might say, for example, Steven has an ability where he surrounds a character with a bubble. The bubble allows the character to absorb one hit before they start taking damage again. But if you boost his defense to like 7, he gets a modifier called Spiky Bubble, which means now when enemies collide with the bubble, they take damage. And you get cool stuff like that from attack, defense, luck, and teamwork.
And that teamwork, sounds really cool.
It is cool. And the teamwork is the nicest thing, because I'm going to tell you something. The last time I made a reference like this was in the game Yoshi's Woolly World. But this Steven Universe game is one of the most positive damn games I have played in a while. When you play a game and you genuinely smile as you play it, there's something to be said for that. When characters are outright congratulating each other, and there's components where, like, Steven actually gets to choose, hey, you know, everyone did a great job on fighting that boss. I want to let them know how well they did. You get to choose who you want to congratulate. And he'll just say, thanks, Dad. You really rocked on that. When the dad's like, oh, thanks, son. You're so kind. And these are like, a lot of these are like voice too, like the actual voices, not just text. So it's like, it comes through very nicely. And the music is pretty freaking sweet. There's a lot of humor in the writing. And even though some of the game things are like fetch questy and little stuff like that, you don't really care. For example, early in the game, one of the fetch quests is like, hey, a guy wants you to find 10 glow sticks for him. It's a side gig, not the premise of the plot. But as you're running through the map, you're enjoying the exploration of the map, so finding glow sticks isn't really a big deal. You're not like, oh, gotta find this shit for this jerk. You're just like, eh, I wonder what's in that bush. Oh, cool, a glow stick. Now I just need a couple more, and I'll be happy to give them over to him. And speaking of the environment and exploring, every character also has map abilities, too, which they can use to do different things. For example, Connie swings a sword, which allows her to crack rocks, and Garnet has like a powerful punch, which lets her smash boulders. And Amethyst has a whip that lets her pull things closer to her, and things like that. Characters just get abilities that they can use on the map to traverse it, and also to instigate preemptive attacks on enemies on the field. So I'm trying to think if there's something that I forgot to mention. Can you think of anything?
How's the story?
The story, I won't say it's anything like it's an amazing plot. It's pretty light, actually. It's more like, hey, bad guy shows up, does bad thing, and takes rock. Heroes chase villain for rock, and that involves them following her to different places and fighting bosses when they catch up to her, and then she runs away again, and then like you have to prepare and things of that nature. There's nothing to write home about, but
it's enough to keep you playing.
It's enough to keep you playing, and in addition to that, whether you're a fan of Steven Universe or, in my case, a possibly new fan, it's just the character interactions and their dialogue that makes you go, you know, I'm kind of enjoying this. I'm not concerned about an epic plot because I'm enjoying what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sure you've played games like that too, where it's like they're not writing the Iliad or anything like that. They just have characters running from one planet to the next and fighting bosses and eating candy from each planet and talking about how delicious it is. But you didn't care because when they eat the candy, they're having so much fun eating it that you want to see what their next reaction is going to be.
And it's good to see a happy game.
Yes. Freaking Blue Sky games are so damn rare. They feel so rare now. I mean, I know they're out there, but I don't come across them all that often anymore.
Yeah, everything is doom and gloom and gray skies and meh.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, just screw that. So I think it's funny I said because I just reviewed the last game and this one. I think technically both could kind of be Blue Sky-ish. Because even though you're fighting aliens in that game, it's done via metal, and everyone's happy about it. Like, they're almost like, oh, we're going to, the whale's going to be destroyed. It's like, ah, we're metal girls. Just smash it. And Steven Lin's like, we're Crystal Gem people, and there's my dad. Let's go fight in the woods or something. Yeah. Everyone's happy. Big freaking whoop. But it's nice.
Well, for $25, what do you think of Steven Universe?
I think it's a buy. And also, one thing I do think I need to mention is I did decide to read some of the reviews after the fact to see what people didn't like about the original releases. And the thing that I seemed to come across as a prominent thing was that they said it was very glitchy. Like, there was a lot of big glitches in the original game. And I want to say this might be one of those examples where waiting for the Switch version pays off, because I didn't come across any glitches. The worst thing I'm going to say I've probably seen was every once in a while, I'd do something stupid and jump behind like the scenery or something in the way I probably wasn't supposed to. And the game's like, oh, he's behind the wall. We got to make it so you can see him. So you just make the entire mountain disappear so you can see your guy and get him from behind there, which is a little jarring, but it doesn't break the game. It doesn't cause your like save files to disappear or anything crazy like that. You just have to get from behind the damn wall. Yeah. So, and you can with no problem. So I think the game is great. I think it's a buy it for sure. And I just wanted to make sure to point that out, that I didn't come across any glitches when I was playing it either.
Nice. I've been sitting on this one. This one's in my backlog for a while, so I might have to fire it up.
Where? Oh, do you already picked up the original?
I have it on Xbox.
I didn't know you were Steven Universian.
I won it in a contest, of all things.
Well, it's a good game to win in a contest. Bam!
So I might have to finally get around to firing this one up.
Yes, you do. Man, we need more time in our lives.
You're making me want to play so many games, Purnell.
I'm glad to hear that. It means I'm doing an enthusiastic job.
You son of a bitch. Yeah.
It's also worth noting, for if I get a bad game, I got to do a really good job of pissing on it.
True. But you got one more game to talk about. That is called Infinite Adventures, developed and published by Stormseeker Games. It released October 30th on Xbox One for $24.99. Infinite Adventures is a dungeon-crawling RPG inspired by classic dungeon RPGs. With fresh new mechanics for exploration, combat, and progression, you are the Traveler, a hero with a forgotten memory. Assemble your party and explore the infinite labyrinth to discover the truths of your past. Purnell, what is Infinite Adventures?
It's a dungeon crawler. Though,
the I end. Think it's interesting. What's your rating?
Womp to womp. Well, one thing I need to point out, though, is the fact that there's definitely a fair bit of weight on this title when we were talking about doing it, because the concern was like, is this game going to be a decent play, considering that there aren't a lot of RPGs or dungeon crawlers, for that matter, on the Xbox. And I was a little worried this game would not be fun to play. But fortunately for you, me, and other people who are hoping to get product to play, this game is pretty solid. The idea is that, like you said, they come up with an excuse for you to bottom dive into a deep labyrinth, which is that you escaped somehow, but lost your memory. And now you need to go back in to learn why you left, or if you were ever born there, or whatever the fuck it's going to be. But you got to go inside and do some shit. And that starts by being inducted into a guild that is ultimately given to you as your guild. Weird, whatever. The king is generous. And what happens here is you get to recruit a party, whether you decide to create the party members yourself or do like I did and take on five random whippersnappers. But your character also has to be created, and that's done at the beginning of the game by way of a series of questions that are brought to you by like a spirit lady who's like, hey, if you found a coin on the ground and a monkey was about to eat it, what would you do to the monkey? And you have to answer the question. And there's like five other questions like that, or six or so. And then after that, coupled with you doing like a little bit of a character creator bit, which is mostly portraits and classes and like places like of origin and things like that nature, you have a default character that you can run with. There are a lot of cool classes of character in this game. Like, then they come with some interesting names that are not just like typically like the fighter or the paladin or the bard. Though they do have characteristics that are similar to the generic classes of we know and love, but they come with different names and like mix and matches. Like my character was a geo seeker, and he was like a gunner, but also sort of a thief rogue. So he was like a gunner rogue who had like enviro elemental mastery. It was a weird hodgepodge of stuff.
But it's unique.
Exactly. It's unique. That's what I mean. Like, it's in a good way. It's not just, hey, you're a paladin. It's like, you're a geo seeker, which is kind of cool. When you play the game, it's just kind of interesting to say. So battles are pretty traditional, but I feel like the Stormseeker company took like 20 different games that they have liked, said, what do we like about these battle mechanics? And said, let's take bits from all of them and put them in this one game. And to me, it works. What do I mean by that? So, start with one game. There was a game I used to like on PS2 called Wizardry, Tales of the Forsaken Land. And in that game, you could get skills that will allow your party members, either two to the entire party, they will allow them to do different things like bum rush the enemies at once, or hit a row of enemies, or put up a wall that defends everybody for one turn or something like that. Well, that kind of feature is in this game too. And that feature is called, they're called Kessens in this game. you can buy new ones from the training hall, but you start out with a few anyway. And what happens is as you beat monsters up, you build up like a sort of like empowerment gauge. And depending on how much you've got, you can activate a Kessen, which might be your front line attacks every enemy in the front line multiple times. Or, like I said, everybody puts up a wall to defend themselves. Or the back line becomes moves up to the front, and the front moves to the back. A number of different little tactical options you can pull off as long as you have enough empowerment to do it. If you like games where your special attacks are based off of how much damage you've received, you've got that. Because certain classes build up rage, and rage is determined by how much damage they've had inflicted upon them, and I think also how much damage they've done to the enemies. Based on how much they've got, determines if they can do certain special moves in their inventory as long as they've learned them via use of skill points. Do you like the idea of just getting energy overturned and eventually just barfing it on the screen? You can do that too, because that's the focus system. And there are certain classes that use focus as their ability method. And what that is just over time, multiple turns, you will build it up and then you can expend it. But if you like traditional MP, you got that too, because certain classes just have MP bars and you just spend magic to do things. Now, all the skills and abilities are built up by way of skill points. Every class has three different schools of education. So you might have, I'm making these up because I don't remember any of the actual ones, but you say the healer might have, you know, like a mastery of bells or something. And it might be like five different skills you can build up via the skill tree there, or healing arts. And you'll have a skill tree there specifically devoted to healing skills. And then like one other one. And every class has three like that. And it allows you to kind of get a little bit specific. Like, hey, I want this healer to be specifically tailored towards Gambit attacks. Oh, I forgot to mention Gambits. In addition to the other things I named, there are also those. And Gambit abilities are just skills you can get. They're passive. And what happens is, if you fulfill a certain condition in battle, you have a certain percentage of chances for this Gambit to occur. So I think one I like for the healer is that if he does a physical attack on an opponent, he has a 50% chance of getting MP back by doing so. So it's a free way to build your MP back, but you got a 50% chance of doing it every turn. And there's other stuff like that in the game too.
But so there's a lot of mechanics in this game.
There's a lot of mechanics, but it's not overwhelming how they exist. They're all there. They're solid mechanics. And it's just as you get the characters, you'll see them. They have a pretty decent tutorial system where like they'll bring up stuff as you play, and then you can review it whenever you want to and get a refresher on it. It's pretty straightforward stuff. I will say everything's fairly much pretty much fully voice acted. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. But what do you expect?
I noticed there's a definite notice in quality between some of the voice actors. Like some of them sound professional, like kind of like me talking into a microphone in a room, decently, you know, soundproofed and everything else. And then others sound like they're calling on a cell phone in a closet somewhere. So it was up and down with the voice acting.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Though, with that in mind, I would say, I mean, I've seen people on the internet act like you know, moderate to bad voice acting is like I just kill their impression of a game. But to me, I'm not that guy. And I honestly found that the majority of the voice acting was good. Like some of it was good. The majority of it was just serviceable. And there were very few that made me go, well, I'm glad this guy stopped talking. but nothing that made me just go, I got to turn this thing off or shut off voices, though. Your mileage may vary with that, of course.
Yeah.
The dungeon crawling itself, I have a mixed bag about, and I feel like I don't want to be too unfair about it because I would say like the environments themselves aren't anything to write home about. It's corridors, essentially. Corridors and rooms. You find treasure chests. Sometimes you'll find rooms with like puzzles, like sliding block puzzles and such. And once you fulfill the puzzle objective, you might get a key to unlock a door that you'll hold on to for good. You can always unlock the door. But even though I made the comment about, oh, the dungeons are nothing to write home about, they're just corridors, I feel like the majority of dungeon crawlers in this day and age are pretty much the same concept. And the very specific tiles that are used to indicate walls, and it's just more like just another environment to run around in. But in the end, you're there for one reason mostly, which is to find treasure, beat the shit out of monsters, and strengthen your characters. And
which is what this game does.
Exactly. And it does, and it's a fun thing to do in this game. And also, I even get to some other little bits of it. So in addition to like just running around the dungeon, there's also different exploration abilities, such as like Decipher or Mine or Harvest. And these things, whereas in a lot of games, like say for example, Etrian Odyssey, the way they worked is that a character would get skill points put into it, and that would allow them to harvest a specific spot a certain number of times. This game doesn't do that, though. What it actually does is if you get to, say, for example, a mining spot, your mining, all of your skills have a letter rating ranging from E to S. And every spot, you're able to do the thing one time. But the what you get and the quality of what you get is determined by your rating. It also determines how likely you are to actually successfully do it and not get attacked by a random mob. So you have to be careful of that and just accept that you're going to probably get into a skirmish on some of these mining or harvest or whatever points until you get your stats up. And this is a matter of just paying money towards the guild to boost your abilities to do so. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention one other thing, because there's more. There's fucking more.
There's a lot in this game.
There is a lot. Have you played Disgaea and actually remember how you would be able to like say take a character and level him up to like 99 or whatever, and then say I'm going to transmogrify him or transmutate him into like a embryo and then feed him to my friend. This game has something like that too, where you are able to level up characters and then retire them if you see fit. And depending on what level they are when you retire them, you'll get a certain number of quality points. What quality points are allowed to do is alter future characters to make them stronger by increasing their title. Just like how earlier when I mentioned that all the different field abilities have a rating from E to S, titles for characters have the same benefit. If you get a default character, his title is going to be rank E. But if you dump some quality points into him, he'll become a title S character. So instead of being, amateur apprentice mage Watson, he'll become expert scholar mage Watson. And his stats will reflect that. He'll be a stronger character in general. So the game also kind of inspires you to do a little bit of min-maxing in raising certain characters, dumping those characters, and putting those quality points into a new character and leveling them up. Or sometimes you can do quests in the game that will also give you these quality points, and you can spend them in that manner, too, to boost characters up. So even though you got a character that you start with, you probably won't end with that character because you're going to want some juiced-up dudes.
Mm-hmm. And I think the bottom line is that there is a lot to do in this game, and it is going to eat up a lot of your free time.
Oh, yeah. Because even when you finish the story, supposedly there's like infinite dungeons, hence the title. And
infinite adventures in the infinite labyrinth.
Of the infinite soul. I don't know what I'm talking about. But it's basically meant to allow for you to do tons of combating, tons of questing. And I'm going to wager that those infinite levels are going to involve some new enemies and stuff like that and new gear to get. And just you'll want to keep getting stronger to beat stronger and stronger guys.
Nice. So overall, $25 on this one. What are your thoughts?
If you're a Dungeon Crawler fan and you own an Xbox, this is a definite buy. Even if you own other consoles, I genuinely think it may be worth your time anyway if you like Dungeon Crawlers, because I like the different things that these guys did for this. It feels different yet this. It feels the same yet different. Like it has its own, it brings its own personality to the table, and it's not just, for example, I don't know, another Nippon Ichi release, for example, something like that. It feels like its own little thing, and I think that little thing, based on being an actual good game, deserves to get some play.
And it's a breath of fresh air from the usual dungeon crawler.
Yes. Like I said, just know that when you're going in, don't expect the dungeons themselves. It's like, oh my god, this is awesome. I'm going up ladders and shit, and it's three-dimensional. Nah, it's corridors, baby.
It's a dungeon crawler.
It's a dungeon crawler. I know, but you got to make statements like that because you get that one guy who's like, you told me this game is a breath of fresh air, and it's just a bunch of corridors. No shit, it's a dungeon crawler. Of course it's corridors.
You dumb bastard.
Let's not go that far.
Fuck that guy.
You uninformed, but now currently getting informed individual.
Dumb bastard.
Me!
You previously uninformed, but now getting informed but still borderline dumb bastard. I agree, though. $25 if you're a Dungeon Crawler fan and you own an Xbox One, this is a must own. I say every time we cover an RPG on Xbox One, support RPGs on Xbox One. So definitely pick this up.
And speaking of which, just a further plug for another game from back in the day, Stranger of Stored City. If you didn't buy that, you should go back and get that too.
You dumb bastard.
You dumb bastard.
Oh, shit. Purnell, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I think this episode will have been released by, I think it will be long done, but I'm doing the Extra Life thing this Saturday.
Well, no, it'll be out tomorrow.
Oh, well, there we go. I guess it is worth plugging. I'll be doing Extra Life this Saturday. So if you got some scratch, dump some in the pot, because people haven't been generous. And I understand why, because these are tough fucking times. But nonetheless, give it a go. This is for the children's and also for my eternal suffering, or 24 hours worth of suffering. But you get the gist.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called The Walking Vegetables Radical Edition, developed by Still Running, published by Merge Games. It released November 8th on the Switch for $12.99. The world is under attack from vegetables turned evil by dastardly aliens. You must answer the call and take up arms to defend the planet, buy weapons, develop your skills, and roam from city to city to take out waves of evil veggie monsters. Beware epic bosses waiting in each city to mash you up. Aha. Aha. Uh-huh. Checking this one out, as you can tell by the giggles. Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
People could tell from my giggles that it's me.
I could.
Aw. Not just because you called me on Skype a little while ago.
Yeah, that's, just circumstances.
Right. I forget. This is immersion. We're in the same room and everything.
I'm totally
up there in Pennsylvania.
Oh, wait, is it Pennsylvania? Bastard. Yeah, why would you want to be here?
I don't know. I'm in Texas, so maybe we just both lose. I have Whataburger, so I win. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I can't contend.
Yeah, come at me, Philly bros. See, what you got, what, a maniac or a fanatic or something like that? We got Whataburger.
I'm not even... I'm like 3 hours from Philly.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm closer to Scranton from the office.
Nice. In Texas, 3 hours isn't any kind of distance at all.
3 hours is like a mile and a half.
Yeah, I'm like 3 hours from the next town in any direction. Oh, boy, but we were talking about veggies.
Yeah, Walking Vegetables Radical Edition.
Yeah, I felt like they missed an opportunity not calling it the Radishal Edition. Or just rad with a dish in parentheses after it. Just the Radish Edition.
That would have been good. That would have been good.
Oh, I need kelp. Anyway.
You son of a bitch.
All right. Let us continue. This is a game.
So what is the Walking Vegetables Radical Edition?
Listen, if your listeners care at all about hearing about a great game. Yeah, anyway.
Oh, God.
Listen, you're going to want to turn up your volume for this. Okay. Walking Vegetables is a video game on the video games. And, It's kind of like Heisenberg in a vaporwave video. I don't know. You play as a bald guy with a goatee and a hat. Well, does he wear a hat? I actually forgot already. But definitely a bald guy, definitely has a goatee, and you get called, presumably out of retirement or something, by the chief of police who has you go after a bunch of vegetables that are walking around, and because of aliens. That is actually their explanation, is aliens. The first thing I noticed that I loved about this game is that your character, when you're going around the police station, he just constantly has a cup of coffee. And if you go to the coffee pot, you can actually tag, or that's where the second player can join you. So this is actually a two-player game.
Nice.
So it's essentially a... so it's a vegan twin stick shooter with roguelike elements. Dare I say it's actually entirely roguelike. A little on the likier side than the lightier side. It's actually pretty challenging. So you walk around this this town, which appears to be not so much randomly generated as just kind of like you don't know exactly where the spots are, but they are going to be, you know, the same kind of spots in every place, which is might remind you a little bit of Quest of Dungeons. It's kind of like that thing. So, you know, like every level has a shop in it and things like that. Speaking of the shop, so you fight vegetables, which actually don't come at you infinitely. They are limited. And once you clear a screen, it will actually change the color of the arrows that lead to that screen from another screen, kind of like Zelda style. But the arrows, you know, they'll turn a different color, so that gives you a better opportunity to kind of backtrack and like know where you came from and know what is safe, because this game is not safe. You have 4 hearts, and everything that an enemy could possibly do to you, including like brushing up against you, will remove a heart. It is extremely hard to get more hearts. This doesn't follow the normal roguelike rules in that you can't just like rest for a minute and have your life force go back up. You actually have to keep on top of your health. And, so there's a thing where basically, rooms can be entered, and sometimes the enemies will leave treasure chests if you clear the screen. And treasure chests and rooms both have to be accessed with keys, and the keys are found randomly by destroying destructible things like, you know, tires and gas station pumps, which, funny enough, can explode right in your face and not hurt you.
Always good.
Yeah, apparently this guy just really hates vegetables, which I'm relating more and more to this character.
Let us move on.
Oh, you. But let me see. You derailed
me. I hornswoggled you.
Yeah, because I'm actually trying to be serious now, so I can't just come up with vegetable puns on the fly. Anyways, what was I saying? Oh yeah. So the other thing is that the thing about it is that the enemies will drop like treasure chests, and treasure chests will contain like extra money or guns, different guns. There's a lot of different guns. But the thing is that the keys are very scarce. So you often will get into a room and have to choose between entering a building and perhaps clearing it out and getting even better treasure. Or going in there, blowing away all the enemies and being presented with another chest that you can't open because you don't have another key. So, keys are rare. However, most treasure chests will yield like, you know, a different weapon or something. And like the weapons are very, very good. You start off with a pistol with infinite ammo, of course, and a baseball bat, which you will have to learn how to use because, the enemies will be firing bullets at you, and those hurt a lot, and you can deflect them with the baseball bat. And in fact, that leads me to another thing that this game has, and that is a merit-based, unlockable achievement thing that actually will improve your game. So, like, you get a certain, like, power-up that's, I suppose, permanent. I haven't seen it go away yet. For doing things like deflecting 100 enemy bullets. I don't think it's per game. I think it actually stacks between games. Because like roguelikes, you lose everything once you start over in this game, including all your money. So as you try and unlock more stuff, it's not going to transfer from game to game. So it seems like these perks are what you want to actually go for. And in fact, I think the first perk... Just to give you a handle on how difficult this game can get, I think the first one I'm going to end up unlocking is going to be the one where you destroy 10,000 things and it gives you more money.
Nice.
Like, so, and I'm already well on my way. I'm into the thousands now. So there's a lot of stuff to destroy in this game. So yeah, this is basically like, and of course the thing I have to mention is the sort of throwbackiness of the game. It's got a bit of an 80s vibe. It's actually not super in your face. This isn't like Video Kid. The main things that you'll notice besides the soundtrack, which is just, like I said, it's basically like a kind of synthy throwback to the 80s, which I think is what they called vaporwave, but that might just be me trying to sound younger than I am. But it definitely has the purples and blues and greens, like kind of neon-ness to it. It also, your character drives from scene to scene in a DeLorean. And the other thing is that the options menu gives you the choice to have VHS scan lines in your gameplay. which, you know, if that gets irritating to you or the novelty just wears off, you can turn it off, which is nice. But that's a pretty funny one to me. It kind of looks like playing a VHS back of you playing the game, except that you're playing it in real time. So yeah, like this game is a kind of a mixed bag for me. Like I really, really love a lot of the things that it goes for. The two things that I felt was like, man, if they just changed this would be like 10,000 times better. Was one, the keys thing, because, man, I abandoned a lot of hard-earned loot because I could not find a key anywhere. Fortunately, the loot stays there, so if you happen to luck out and get a whole bunch of keys, you can backtrack and go back and get your treasure.
That's good.
The other thing is that the game's controls are not customizable, which is normally not a problem in a twin-stick shooter, but if you're trying to play this game in portable mode where you've got the Joy-Cons, your fire button is the Z right, like the bumper, and you're swinging your bat is the right trigger. So both of your weapons are on the top of the controller, whereas a lot of the face buttons are not actually really used, except under certain circumstances. And then like your weapon switching is done with the left bumper. And I forget what the left trigger does, but it's also important to the game. And so you like end up with like this, you know, eagle claw like hand crampiness when you're trying to play this game in portable mode. And of course, there's no touchscreen interaction whatsoever. So overall, I really like this game. I feel like it has a couple of points that could have been, nudged a bit, but.
But overall, $13. I wasn't sure how much more you had there.
Yeah, I know. I just kept rambling, and then I was like, "Oh wait, I'm actually starting to conclude this, so I better let him ask me the question." No, $12.99. Honestly, I would recommend this simply based on, for one, it's really fun to play. That despite the difficulty and the amount of time you're going to spend trying to kind of claw your way out of the default settings. This game actually will keep you coming back. It's really fun, and you know, it's fun to have the enemies crowd in at you, you know, at you and blow them away with an alien shotgun. The other thing is that the second shotgun, player,
obviously,
yeah, and the other thing is that you don't see a lot of roguelikes with two player simultaneous co-op. So just for that reason, I would say this is worth picking up with a friend. Although, don't think you're going to get to play it in portable mode because it will not work with the Joy-Cons unattached because it needs two shoulder buttons on each side. However, I have plenty of controllers, so that's not a problem.
Yay.
So yeah, I think that it's worth getting just for those points alone. I think that just something that all developers should pay attention to is you know, don't lock your players out of the good stuff for such a long time.
Yeah, give them more keys.
More keys, please. If there are more treasure chests, there should be more keys. However, that's just, you know, that's just a thing. And like I said, I would have liked some customizable controls just to have been able to play it in portable mode a little bit better. But, those are all nitpicky. I think it's a fine, fine game for $12.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
One other game for you to talk about is called Monster Loves You, developed and published by Radial Games, released September 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Live the life of a monster from birth in the slime vats to elderhood and beyond, making decisions that affect the world of monsters and humans in this storybook adventure. Chris, what is Monster Loves You?
Monster Loves You. Aww. I don't know that the monster loves me. I control its very fate. But does that mean I've earned its love?
Well, the title is that it loves you, so I would assume yes.
I guess so. So yeah, Monster Loves You is a choose-your-own-adventure book in the form of a Switch game.
I did the same thing earlier where I asked Ashley if her charger was working well because it wouldn't charge my Pro controller, and I kept calling it a Wii controller, then a Wii U controller, before I'm like, no, Switch. What the hell's wrong with me?
We're old.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah. Okay, so Monster Loves You is a choose-your-own-adventure game for the GameCube. And it just starts off like, you know, it just really throws you into it. It's like, where was I? And then you choose, like, the one choice that you get is to start the story. And so that's kind of nice. Yeah, you play the game as essentially the decision maker, the conscience, if you will, of a monster who was born in a vat of slime. And the slime contains, quote-unquote, the memories of all monsters that have come before it. Now, not only are you making choices in order to sort of, you know, get a story out of it, which is, of course, the point of choose your own adventure books, the game has an element to it where you actually increase stats based on your decisions. So, although you do choose, like, on the onset to be a ferocious monster or a kind monster or a clever monster, you know, that'll help with your initial ratings, but actually through the first couple of cycles, which is to say, your birth through and your, you know, infant life, through adolescence, you know, almost every choice that you make, when presented with a situation will boost a certain stat and sometimes lower another stat. So you end up, you know, if you choose to be more aggressive, then, your bravery or ferociousness will go up. Your cleverness and kindness might go down. There's also one for honesty. So, you know, you can be honest, but not necessarily kind, et cetera, et cetera. And so, the way that you get into these choices is it actually, for every phase of your life, it gives you a certain amount of days, a depressingly low amount of days, honestly, because they're, It says kind of right off the bat that monsters don't live very long.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, the first phase will be like 7 days, and then the next, or 10 days, and the next phase will be 10 days, and then it'll go up to like 14 days, but seems to be that your monster isn't going to live more than like, you know, a summer.
Wow, that's morbid.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, some of it does get morbid, because it does deal with like actually life and death. So basically, all the choices that you make early on, the way that you make these choices is that you choose scenarios which aren't really detailed. They just give you pictures of a kind of vague thing that might happen in the story. And when you choose it, then it will start the story, and then you make your choices, and then reap the benefits or, you know, take the punishment of stat increases and decreases. Now, the stat increases and decreases are not actually, like, they don't affect too much within the story initially. Sometimes you'll make a choice where it's like, you can make this choice, but it requires a high amount of cleverness. And, you know, if you choose it, then it makes it, it literally shows some dice being rolled, and then it, you know, it checks your, cleverness stat, and then, you know, you may succeed or not succeed. However, the point of it is to get all of your stats as high as possible, or, you know, you're role playing essentially, so you can choose to have your, only one or two stats go up and, you know, kind of dismiss the others. But, if you play a balanced game like I did initially, because I figured that's what they wanted me to do, I ended up with really high everything except for, I think, ferocity, because ferocity tends to take away from other stats. Or I just didn't choose enough ferociousness things. And then, like, as you get into your adulthood and then you eventually start melting into slime, which is your way of knowing you're about to die. and so you have like this, you have a few more scenarios you can do. And basically you're kind of working your way towards whether you want to become an elder and actually help the community of monsters, you know, with their relations with humans. Or if you want to basically, you know, accept your fate and dissolve back into the very slime that you were born out of. You see, that's the cycle of life for monsters, is that they melt into slime at the end of their life, and that's the slime from which new monsters appear.
Ah.
Yeah. So, I had, like, you basically have to pass a few tests, which, you know, involve, of course, answering questions, and it checks your stats. But if you do well and you ascend to elder status, then that's when the stats really come into play. Because then you have, like, a pretty good amount of days. I want to say it's like 20 days or so. And you can choose all kinds of scenarios with your fellow monsters to increase their opinion or decrease their opinion of humans. And then you also have the choice to go into the human's town and talk to the humans and help them out in various ways or hurt them in various ways to try and raise their opinion. So every option in these scenarios does involve like an actual like statistic check. So you pretty much, if you choose like the ferocious approach and you don't have high ferocity, you're going to lose out. And there's another stat that's basically respect, which, again, respect is usually what you get if you pass a stat check. And then there's the human's opinion of monsters will go up if you successfully pass their check. And, you know, you can choose different options to get better. So I actually got both stats up into the high 90s. I managed to, you know, role play my way into basically the best ending. And, whereupon you find out that there's actually 14 different endings.
Wow.
And you can unlock them all with all your new monsters. And so it's a storybook that you get to read time and time again. And funny enough, there's actually an option right at the end of the game that if you choose the other choice, which is an obviously bad choice, you get a whole new ending.
Oh, God.
So two endings that you can get right off the bat. I'm not going to say what they are, but I'm sure you can imagine.
Well, that, and it's not that expensive to find out, so...
No, exactly. This game would be fantastic for kids. I found it quite enjoyable as an adult. But I really think although the story does deal with like life and death and things like that, it's actually pretty accessible. Like, you know, it always makes death sound like, you know, it's just another part of life kind of deal. And it's a very wholesome story, even though it deals with slime and like sometimes violence and things like that. It's like, you know, it does kind of like teach you lessons about like, you know, consequences and, you know, how bad choices can affect things like your reputation, et cetera, et cetera. And the reading level is really, really good. And I think that the illustrations are really adorable. Of course, there are no scenes of violence because the game is entirely told in text, and it basically just gives you like portraits of the monsters' reactions and things like that, which some of which are very funny.
Nice. Well, then yeah. Overall, $10 on it. What do you think of it?
$10 for sure, as long as you know that you're getting into what is essentially a book rather than a fully fledged video game. I mean, it really is a choose your own adventure visual novel, more so than anything else. You don't directly control any character. You know, whether you're playing with a controller or the touchscreen, it's exactly the same. You just read and choose options until you win. So if that sounds appealing to you, this is definitely a very well done approach to that. So yeah. If you feel like getting in some reading or, you know, just kind of relaxing with a nice story where no matter how bad or good you are, you will always get an ending. And in fact, you are encouraged to play around with being good and bad, so you can get all the endings.
Nice. So
I think it's definitely, there's a lot of content here for $10. So I say that if this is your thing, this is definitely the thing to go for.
Sounds good. I think you just sold me on it.
Yay.
I've been looking for a good choose your own adventure book. So,
oh yeah, this one's great for that.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Cool.
All right. Well, Chris, always good having you on chat about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Veggie wrap it up.
All right. And final game to talk about tonight is called Grip Combat Racing, developed by Caged Element, published by Wired Productions. It released November 6th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4 for $39.99, out of Steam Early Access for $29.99. Grip is a high-octane, hardcore combat racer packing ferocious speed and armed to the teeth with heavy weapons. Checking this one out. Jacob Garner, how are you doing?
I'm doing.
Just doing?
I am just doing. I just got over like a really crappy cold last week, so I'm just doing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention, Grip is also launching on Xbox Game Pass.
Oh, huh. That's pretty nifty.
So day one, if you don't have the $40 to play it, but you have Game Pass, good news, you get to play it.
That's pretty handy.
So how is it?
It's pretty good. You know, it feels like an I'd call it like an unpolished, like adult version of Mario Kart.
Interesting.
There's still some kinks for the game to work out, but pretty much what it is that you're racing around the track, and of course, obviously, if I'm making references to Mario Kart, you know, you've got certain power ups and all that kind of stuff. But the big thing about Grip is that you can change how you're racing. And by that, I mean, like, normally you're just racing on the ground. Well, all the tracks are built on a bit of a curve all the way up to the ceiling. And so, well, they also have a ceiling. And so you're, so what you can actually do is that you can flip in between the floor to the ceiling or even to the side of the walls. And
so you can grip to different surfaces.
Uh-huh.
I see where they're going with this name.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty random, but, you know, I think you've proven me wrong. So, pretty much, like, it's actually a really interesting game mechanic, because it can actually change how the race goes, because after a while, you'll notice that there's more... I don't want to call them boosts, but like, I mean, that's what they do, but they speed up your car if you run over them. And you'll notice that like sometimes the ceiling will have more of them than the floor and stuff like that. So eventually you'll start needing to plan out your entire race because you'll have played the track enough that you'll know where, you know, which, like, is it advantageous to be on the ground? Is it better to be on the ceiling? You know, it's very rarely advantageous to be on the wall, interestingly enough, but it really changes the dynamic of the race, which is a very welcome addition, because I mean it makes everything more insane. Like, you can actually dodge stuff by like boosting up to the wall at the last second, or flinging yourself up on the ceiling and then just hitting that, like, one of those little boost tiles, and then just it actually, like, that mechanic is actually more fun than any of the weapons in the game. but it actually ends up being pretty entertaining. One of the things that I was quick to notice when I first started playing is that the tutorial level, like, you're only supposed to like do like, I think like 5 laps just so you get the hang of it. But the game ends up actually letting you just play it for as long as you wanted. I ended up doing like 45 odd laps just because it's that much fun, just like bouncing off the walls and like trying to figure out how the game mechanics work. Now, with that being said, like, it wants to give you the idea that you can go everywhere. There is like an out of bounds, usually with inside the track, which is a little disappointing because the game never really explicitly tells you where like the out of bounds is going to be. And so some areas where you think, oh, well, you know, I'll just be able to, you know, I could just cruise along this rock. It's like, no, we're going to like start you back on the track. Other areas, you can like really end up screwing yourself over because you'll have gone far off onto this canyon thing. Now the game does also let you reset yourself, which is really handy. And I actually found that to be really useful because you end up not losing too much of the race with it. Like there's a lot of games where you can reset your car and then like you end up being in like last place, but Grip is actually pretty fair with resetting. And I think it actually encourages it, which I thought was a nice touch to it.
That's cool. So it's called Combat Racing. Tell me about the combat.
I mean, it's a standard stuff. I mean, like you've got your defensive stuff, like, you know, your shields, and boosts and all that kind of stuff. In terms of combat, like it's okay. I mean, it needs more weapons and it needs better aiming with the weapons. Like most of the time you're going to find yourself using either the missiles or the chain gun. And the chain gun aims horribly unless, that player is within a pretty quick or, you know, a pretty close vicinity of you, but that missile can do serious damage. And it can target people, whether they're up on the ceiling or on the wall. Now, one of the things I thought was kind of interesting is that you actually have to strategically use it.
Sorry. Stop dying.
No. one of the things I thought about the missile is that you have to be strategic about how you use it, because if you launch it too close to a wall or you're not giving yourself like enough area to properly launch it, it'll actually blow up in your face and it'll slow you down, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Nice.
Now, in terms of combat, I actually found the Speed Demon thing, which focuses more on it's pretty much just racing without the weapons, you know, and you're just utilizing like, you know, the whole Grip thing. I found that to be more fun than trying to use the weapons, but I mean, I think the weapons need a lot of work, but I think it could be a fun addition to it. But the gameplay mechanic of just flipping all over the walls and all that kind of stuff and using that to your advantage, it's pretty fun. You know, there were plenty of races where I ended up in first place. There were some I ended up in like fourth place, but even then it's just like, I don't know. I always had fun while I was playing it.
Which is the mark of a good game being fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I said, like it's still a little rough. But you know, the graphics look pretty, the gameplay handles decently, except for like, I mean,
again with the dying.
No, I can't help it. you know, like the control, like the weapons, like they were my main issue with the game. You know, it's just like for something that's called combat racing, the weapons I never found to be particularly fun or that exciting. So even if it went along more along the lines of like Blur back on the Xbox 360, you know, if it had like those kind of weapons, I think the game would be fine. So that was honestly my only complaint about the game.
Just the weapons didn't feel that good.
No. Yeah. It's just, yeah, the weapons, you know, they never felt very useful. I mean, it's a blast to play. It's a blast to race. I had a lot of fun with that. It's just the actual combat was just kind of meh.
Well, as it stands, $30 on Steam, $40 on console. What do you think of the game?
I definitely recommend checking it out. It just got released, and I know the developers seem like they're pretty eager to get this thing off the ground. So I would assume it's going to get worked on quite a bit. I mean, I definitely recommend keeping an eye on it and definitely checking it out. If you've got Game Pass, go ahead, download it. I mean, it's a lot of fun to play. For $40, yeah, it's definitely one of the more fun games I've had to review.
Nice, so sounds good.
Yeah, so definitely check it out.
Well, I plan on it because I have Game Pass.
Woo!
Yay! Aren't you special? I am special, you son of a bitch.
I mean, you have Game Pass and a good internet connection.
So, well,
you
know. the internet is, it could be good.
that's right. You're back with Service Electric, aren't you?
No, we're with Atlantic Broadband.
Oh, I've never even heard of them.
Yeah, they're
special.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, Grip sounds pretty good.
Yeah, definitely recommend checking it out.
Does it have online? I forgot to ask about that.
It does. However, when I was playing, I couldn't ever find anybody. I assume it's just pre-release. Because it was a review. Right. But yeah, it does have online play.
Cool. So when it officially launches on Game Pass, we will have to play a bit.
Yeah, of course. I'm definitely keeping this one on my 360.
On your 360. God damn, dude.
On my Xbox One.
Oh, Jacob, what are we going to do with you?
Turns out I've just been lying about all these reviews. I never bought an Xbox One.
Yeah, the gameplay's awesome. The dogs were really cool at that part of the game.
Grip has a really interesting RPG element to it. And who knew it was a horse simulator?
Well, I did, but... Shit. On that note, that is it for this episode. Jacob, thanks for coming on and talking about Grip. Thanks again to Burnell and to Chris and to Tim for coming on and taking care of their stuff as well. Jacob, do you have any final words to end the show?
I still need to do my review of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego for MS-DOS.
When are you going to?
I don't know. We just haven't gotten around to it. I think because of time constraints.
We'll get it next episode.
Sweet.